This is podcast number 208, part 2 of Planning and Goal Setting. Enjoy.
All right. Is it a good time for me to go back to my thing now?
Never a good time.
But never a good time. Yeah, who's going to stop me? All right, yeah. All right. So when it comes to farming stuff, when it comes to ag, I found that the best thing that I do is
you are meat.
I go back to wow, that's some dark cooking there.
You get for having podcasts.
Yeah, so podcasts and cooking don't go together. Okay. Drink more wine, that'll fix it. All right. So rather than making a firm plan, the thing that I do is I make a long list of the things that I want. In fact, you know, part of it is that periodically you sit down and you just got to do some brainstorming. And this list is going to end up 15 to 20 pages long. And I think it's important to keep the list in priority order. Although I also, what I like to do is to mark off certain items or maybe color code them as things that are best done in the spring, summer, winter, fall, whatever. And then that way when it's like, okay, now it's May, some of these things are better to be done in May. And then which are the ones that are the best done in May? But then, the thing is that as you start doing some things off of the top and you get like halfway into the development of it, then it's like, you know what? I don't like this. I don't like where it's going. I don't like where it's ending up. And I'm going to stop it and I'm going to move it down on the list and hope that, a better path presents itself and I'll come back to it later. In the meantime, I'm going to go on to the next item in the list. And I kind of feel like the thing to do is that with this list, there's a powerful emphasis on it is edited regularly, even daily, for both things getting done and also for things being added to it. And it's kept in priority order all the time. So the things that just seem like nutty and out there go to the very, very bottom. Then, the other thing is that with this list, now granted, if you're going to like build a house, or if you're going to build some kind of shelter or something like that, I do, you know, scratch things out on paper and get them, because it's true. You can do so much better planning it out, but I don't think I'd ever, design something out that's going to take, more than a week or even more than 2 weeks without kind of thinking to myself, that this is going to be very flexible. This has the option to change. I think even when I've built shelters that, you know, I'll get into it a little ways and say, nah, I want to change the design a little bit and then I'm going to make it a little bit different. I think that's a fair thing to do. So basically, I'm a big fan of the list and I say this list is full of enough stuff to keep people busy for 20 years. And at the same time, the stuff, if you take the top fifth of the list, this will take a year to get done. But I also know that I'm going to add, like, the thing that's the bottom of the list for the next year, that's probably not going to ever get done until 5 years out, just because I'm going to insert stuff into this list throughout the year so much that it's going to end up being pushed down. Now, one other last attribute to add to this is the whole idea that, and this is something from Nearing and Nearing's book, The Good Life, and I think that it's good that people spend probably, there's a certain amount of time that has to go to the list. It's like, these are the things that have to be done right now, and some of them are dirty jobs. They just have to get done. And then at the same time, I think it's good for people to sometimes say, you know what? We're caught up on the things that are kind of like, you know, on fire, and we got to take care of them right away. And now we're going to have one day where it's more like soul labor rather than bread labor. And the idea is pick anything from anywhere on the list, and that's the thing that you can work on today.
Did you talk about Scott and Helen Nearing?
In the past podcast, I believe I have talked about the Nearings. So, all right. So basically, when Owen and I had this big, long discussion, he said, you have to have a goal. You have to have a mission statement. And it's kind of like, well, let's see. Permies.com has never had a mission statement or a written goal. And yet, somehow, it's gotten to be where it is today.
And, am I?
So Ivan says that I'm special. I ride the short bus. I think that this is actually, because to me it's kind of like I think writing goals or a mission statement or something like that, that can be a brainstorming exercise of a type. And then when you are working in a group, then it's like, okay, if you're going to try and do things with consensus, all right, you're going to need these kinds of documents. Because then it's like, you know, because there's going to get to be a point in time when someone's going to say, you can't do that because that's contrary to what's in our goals. And but on the other hand, if you have a central leader, somebody that is going to be your vision person, then it's kind of like I don't think you need it. You're gonna basically go along with the vision of the central leader, and the central leader can say, you know, well, here's what I think we ought to do right now, you know. And granted, we can talk about, like, you know, the map kind of stuff. And on top of that, I think a map is a great thing to have for, like, okay, for this project, here's a map of the property as it is now, and then I'm going to draw on that to kind of give you an idea of, like, what I'm talking about, what I think we're going to do for the next 2 weeks. I think that's a good map. I think it's even fair to say, you know what, today I was thinking about it, sometime in the next 20 years, here's what I'd like to see, something like this. I think that's a fair thing to do. But then it's kind of like you might, you know, it's like, been, like, for example, in the software industry, we have something called UML, and this is what we use to kind of describe engineering, software engineering stuff. But I got to the point where, I mean, people were making these documents and in a UML editor, and they're printing up these things that filled out pages and pages and pages, just reams of paper. Like, here's the description for the software that we're going to design. And I got to the point when I was in charge, I would say, UML is for whiteboards only. And so we're going to have, if you need to communicate with another engineer, then you'll draw up the UML to say, this is what's in my head, and I want you to understand what I'm talking about. And they go, oh, all right, I get it now. And then you erase it. And then you don't go and say, this is what you have to do. Because then we start getting into development. It's like, you know what? Now I have this idea, as we're sitting here halfway through building this, that there's a better way. And so what I want to do is kind of use what we've already made, but then I also want to kind of do it in a different direction. All right. So, Robert, you were airing out your armpit a minute ago.
Well, there's... when you're doing this, whether it's the map or the list or even the goals probably, is that there are details that fall under those headings that when they're out there, it's really small and blurry and you don't know exactly what that detail is yet, but you know that there's going to be some. There's probably a bunch of them. But you can't tell what they are till you get closer to them. And when you're close enough to see what those details actually are, you need to be flexible enough to deal with them, as, you know, they may have barely something to do with your list or goal, but you have to be able to, like I said, you have to be flexible to deal with them as they arise.
True.
You can't have that etched in stone thing. It's like, oh, this detail is forcing me to abandon this whole pile of stuff over here, because this is obviously, you recognize that as more important, and it goes to the top of the list.
I think the most important thing I want to emphasize is that in the world of holistic management, and from Owen, and we spent 5 hours going over this, Owen was very insistent, and I think now I think I've convinced him to a different path. Very insistent. You have to have goals. And my position is, no, you don't. Goals are nice, especially when there's somebody around to share them with. And I think it's fair to say, like, you know what, we're gonna get some pigs coming in. We don't currently have pigs on this land. We're gonna get some pigs in here in a week. And so, you know, we want to get some fencing in. We want to make sure that they have plenty to eat. They have good, clean water. And so what have we left out? Anybody? Anybody? You know, the goal is to have pigs here in a week. All right? We have it written down on a piece of paper somewhere and stuff like that, but that's a goal, it's a kind of goal. But when we start talking about mission statement, then it's kind of like, yeah, you're talking about, I want to be able to eat food off my land. But it's kind of like, did you have to say that? Did you have to write that down? I mean, is that not?
Not
I mean,
that obvious was, the one, but there's a lot of others that weren't obvious to us. But I think it was helpful
come
for
up
us to
once
down.
You start discussing it and
yeah.
going over these things.
Yeah.
Well,
like,
I think
well, this leads to this, and man, actually, that
you learn a little bit.
That detail maybe is important. The one we didn't even think of. So we thought of this other stuff, and it
right.
led to that.
You learn something about the other people that are, you're sharing this land with. What's going on in their noggin, which can make a big difference. You might find out that there's plans for a motocross track going through your living room, and that you're not okay with that.
We're on the same page. Same book, same page.
Okay, all right. Well, but, and so when you sat down and made these goals, it was rather comforting. It's like,
yeah,
you know, okay, we're on the same, but I mean, it's also possible that you could have found out some things that were like, you got to be fucking kidding me,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So, but that could have happened.
And I think with the bigger the group, the more important having something clearly stated that everyone is like, yeah.
That everybody agrees on.
And
so, in my case.
I like the phrase mission statement. Don't use that phrase, but.
Well, okay, so
something
here's.
Something written down that everyone's like, yeah.
I think, so here's what I'm doing. It's a little bit different. And that is that, so I want to be able to, so I'm real close to getting a piece of land now. And then the idea is there's like, I don't know, like 50 people that have told me that as soon as I have it, they want to be there. And it's kind of like, so I'm not asking any of these people what their plans are for this land. But what I have done is I've stated it really clearly. It will be my land. And on top of that, here's 200 podcasts you can listen to that'll give you some kind of idea of what sort of evil emperor I will be. And so, and then people have to ask themselves, are they willing to, like, is being part of this better than being on their own, or better than what they're doing now? A lot of them are in a rat race kind of situation. And so it's a different way. So is it a mission statement? No. But I think it accomplishes a lot of what you guys accomplished by doing your mission statement. And so when Owen was being really emphatic about this, you got to have goals. You got to have a mission statement. And I'm saying, I don't got to do that. But I have a different recipe that I'm doing that perhaps wasn't considered by Alan Savory.
As a ruthless dictator,
exactly
you
right.
don't need
yeah.
to write that stuff down.
You can have it in your head.
Yeah, and implement it.
And change it as you will.
I'm going to.
As you will. But if you have a group of people that are all on the in charge committee,
or if you have two people.
Yeah, you can do the in-charge committee.
Yeah, any more than one person
yeah.
on the in-charge committee.
Yeah,
you need to have a page in a book that everybody can be on. At least one page. You know, there's other pages in the book, and some people can go to that page, and some people go to this other page.
But because without the page, people's recollections of what was discussed might change.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
page.
I hear you there.
Go back to that.
Consensus.
Go, this is what we talked about, and everybody agreed at that time.
As far as being a ruthless dictator, I think the first thing I'm going to do is get myself a big old stick and name it Ruth.
But as a dictator.
No, so I could be Ruthed. I'll be a Ruthed dictator.
But it's important that as a dictator, you reserve to yourself the ability to change and to redirect the processes
yeah.
on your land.
Right.
And that's not the same as an operation like Jacqueline and Joseph have.
Right.
It's not like Brian and Alexander. Those are two people that have not only got their lives intertwined, they have their farm intertwined. And neither of those individuals in either of those operations would, I think, in my opinion, and from my observation, just knowing them each for like one day, neither one of them would ever step forward and proclaim, regardless of what you think, this is how it must be.
I think ruthless dictators should be prepared to do everything themselves.
That's true. And I think,
yeah,
and
you
so, want
to make all the decisions, then congratulations, you get to do everything.
So at my online sites at permies.com and coderanch.com, that if there's a dirty job and nobody else, none of the other volunteers want to do it, then yeah, I have to do it myself. Or it just never happens. And so, yeah, there's a lot to be said for that.
The thing is, like if you have woofers or interns and stuff like that, if you own the farm, I mean, you are the boss. You can just leave if you don't want to be there and learn, and that is the situation no matter what.
Right.
And if you choose to be ruthless on a dick, you kind of... But I don't think you...
Put the dick in dictator?
I think that's the type of community you are talking about, Paul. I think there's a place for it where people maybe are they 50 years old or whatever they are, but they need something different, and a community like this may be the way of doing it for them.
So I think in the examples that we've looked at, where they were couples on a farm, it seems to me that a lot of what happens, brothers, that a lot of what happens is that it still ends up being a dictatorship. But what happens is it's like we've divided things on the farm, and so like with Brian and Alexandra, it seems like the cow and some of the animals was Alexandra, and Brian was Growies, and you know there was a division, and it's like, okay, so Brian's in charge of these things and Alexander's in charge of these things, and where these things meet, they that's where they coordinate. And it seems like with Jacqueline and Joseph, it seemed like there was some stuff like that as well. And the Bullock brothers, I know it's divided that way as well. I imagine here at Del Artemis Farm, I'm guessing that there is some division like that. Is that true? And there's a nod, two nods. So we have consensus. basically, I kind of think that when you have a true consensus system, it's like every issue has to be discussed and every issue has to, you know, be approved by both parties. But I like the designs where you can divide things. And even on a single piece of property, I mean, I like the idea that here's an aspect, all the bees, there's somebody, Bob. Bob is bonkers about bees, and Bob takes care of the bees. All the cattle, then that's taken care of by Ed. Ed is bonkers about, you know, the cattle. And so each aspect of the farm usually has somebody who's running point, because that's the thing that they are just super interested in. At the Bullock Brothers, they made a big leap forward in how chickens are managed, because my impression is none of the Bullock Brothers are interested in raising chickens. But they've got somebody in there now who really is, and they've moved them into this new phase of doing paddock shift stuff. And so, because that person was interested in that stuff. And so this is a way, which I think is probably the most successful way that I've ever seen. So I've always referred to it as aspect-oriented management. And that's where, you know, a person takes on an aspect and is in charge of that aspect and is the ruthless dictator of that aspect. And then if you're going to do something much larger, then you have somebody who is the ruthless dictator of all those ruthless dictators.
What I find is you're more comfortable with the word dictator. You know, other people, even though the buck stops with them, or they are, well, Brian Kirkfliet, he is the long-term land steward. He kept saying, well, yes, I'm the long-term land steward, so the buck does kind of stop with me. But he did not at all like calling himself a dictator.
Right.
I thought that was just kind of interesting.
What he is?
He is, yeah. Because the buck, he's the landowner, it's his place, and it stops with him. But people, you know, you're just more straightforward about it, and some people have a hard time
with
that.
Well, at the same time, I wouldn't want anybody coming onto my land and being a part of what I'm doing and, like, trying to find a way of saying that I'm not in charge, but they're in charge, which I think for a lot of young people, that's like rule one. When I was in a consensus-based community, the community was destroyed when that woman walked on, and we all thought she was lovely, and then it was her second day that she announced to everybody that all of the food will be divided a different way. And it's like, no, we have a consensus system. Okay, you will all reach consensus that the food will be divided a different way.
Whoa.
Yeah, you know, and it's kind of like, so it's, I don't want to have that. And on my farm, then people went to the woman that is now my ex-wife, and when they didn't like the answer they got from me or the direction that I provided, they thought that, you know, they could go to this other person and get the direction that they did want. And that went to Disasterville.
Well, that happens in families all the time.
And yes, it happens in all kinds of disasters all the time.
And I
want to make sure that there's, I want to mitigate potential disaster.
Right. And I'm going to ask, kind of a general open-end question.
All right.
Because I've heard your criticism of consensus organizations. And it's based on your very real experience of something that was a consensus base that kind of you just described was a disaster, and it basically blew the situation totally apart. Is that fair to say that was? Because I wasn't there, but that's my impression from what you said, that the organization or the operation got blown apart because of this one personality that just came in and said, you'll have consensus to do it my way. Is that what happened?
So consensus, I mean, different consensus systems are set up in different ways, and of course they've got different people to work with, and by different people, each person brings their own bucket of psychology to the scenario.
Sure.
So they usually decompose in different ways.
Okay.
But a lot of times that it is. There's one person.
Right. Okay. Well, given that, I wanted to ask, are you aware of, or do you think it's possible for an organization that elects to make decisions by consensus to succeed, or are they all doomed to fail?
Okay. It is possible.
Do you know of any that have succeeded?
Yes. Yes. There are many that have. They can. They can. It's just generally the kiss of death. I think consensus systems can work wonderfully. And I think I've podcasted about this before, but it depends on everybody that's in the consensus system being noble, as opposed to being human.
See, my experience with consensus that I've seen work, and I hate to say it because it's kind of a failure on my part, is women seem to be able to figure out how to do consensus. And every time I've been in consensus decision making, been really frustrating for me. It's like I don't get how you're getting anywhere. But I have known organizations of women that run themselves on consensus basis, and they're getting her done. And I've thrown that as an observation. I'm not anything other than saying I've seen it, and I can't do it, but I've seen it.
So the example I was given a little while ago, where a community was destroyed, a consensus-based system was destroyed, that was by a woman. It was a woman that came in and said, now the food bill will be divided a different way.
Were there men in the consensus group?
There were men. I'm a man.
I meant all women organizations, not men.
But
consensus groups that were made up entirely of women.
So, right. I can totally see this woman going into a consensus group entirely of women. And I could see that she will get them all to concede to her way. And it's like, you know, I've been asked to consult on a variety of different cases where things have gone wonky. And a lot of them I can't talk about. I can't think of one where, it was indeed all women. But it does seem like in a lot of cases, it's men and women alike where there's somebody who just basically is, and it's like, everybody needs to concede because I'm going to bring so much psychotic crazy to this that I'm going to make your life hell for the next 6 months unless you just do what I say. And it's like, that's a pretty common theme. And I'll bring the crazy through. I have in my basket of tricks, I've got 187 flavors of crazy. But you know what? I'll bet you in the next 6 months, I can think of a few more to add to that.
Can the two men stop talking, and can we ask the women if they have that similar experience? Because I'd be interested to know if they have a different perspective based on their experience. Because, like I said, I saw it as my failure. I couldn't do it.
I don't see it as a gender-based thing, but okay, I'll go along with this.
I don't think it's gender-based. I think it would be difficult for both men and women. I have worked with unreasonable men and unreasonable women. I have been, you know, had family, casual, and professional relationships with men and women, and unreasonableness comes in both genders.
So a small consensus
is
a group
Marina?
Of...
What about you,
Marina? Ditto, okay.
Yeah.
You know, so a lesbian couple... Have things ever gone sour with a lesbian couple? I mean,
no.
That's two women in a small consensus system.
I have a bisexual friend who has had both lesbian relationships and heterosexual relationships, and she says there's so much more emotional processing with the women relationships she's been in.
Kind of blowing your theory out of the water here, Jeff.
The question sounds like to me is how do you vet whatever gender's person's basket of crazy before you let them be on your board or whatever.
Be in your group.
Right.
Yeah,
be in your group that's supposed to come to consensus. I mean, you were in a group that let this person in, and then
the next day. But okay, now I've podcasted about this before, Ivan.
I think you have.
Okay. So I mean, basically, in a nutshell, even if you've got a process where it's like you're really going to filter people out, and you put them through a grueling year long process of filtering. Once they're in, people change. And that's you know, one of those constants. People change.
Yeah.
That's kind of funny, isn't it? Constant change.
Power, is that Zen?
I don't know Zen. So, but the thing is, I like the one. Power corrupts.
Absolute power corrupts absolutely.
But they changed that to where it's absolute power is really kind of neat.
So. Lord Acton is twirling in his grave.
I like having absolute power. I've got it on both of my websites. It's I get people who come up and tell me how I have to run my site, and then I go, boom, you're gone. And that's fun.
And that's what you'd like in your community as well, is it?
Yeah.
You would vet people as best you can. They need to listen to all your podcasts and know what you're like.
Yeah.
And then... You know, if they come on the land and then they can't kind of
so far
handle it, they would be gone.
Ivan, you've listened to all of my podcasts.
Except the first ones, yes.
Okay, so you've listened to a lot of my podcasts.
Yes, most of them.
And if I had 200 acres right now and an opening, you know, would you be okay with serving under my evil rule?
The answer is yes.
Okay, so basically here's how I look at it, is that I expect that 99.99% of the population, when exposed to my podcast, would shut it off sometime during the first one. and say, this guy...
And they hit the first step word.
...is an arrogant... I think that would lose some. For whatever reasons. And then by the time you've listened to all of them, or damn near all of them, I mean, we've really filtered out a lot of people.
Yeah.
I mean, if you keep listening, then it's like there's something to that.
Yeah.
And I think this is a filtering mechanism. And so then when John moved out to Missoula and I connected him with Caleb and Krista, they got along great. And now I don't think I can get them ever to part ways again. And now John's been there over a month.
They are visiting every night and doing projects together and stuff. They're having a great time.
It's a great match. And so I think that this is the filter. But of course, people change. And I think part of the system is to prepare for that change. Now in consensus-based communities, then, oh, we got food. There's food ready? I think this podcast is about done. Anybody else have anything to say? I think the thing is planning in your groups. There needs to be a really clear way for people to come in, but there also needs to be a clear path to get them out. And consensus systems, it can be very difficult because of course, the other thing
is... I don't
know
how to do that, but I think that would be...
For me, being in a consensus-based system... How can I be sure that I'm not the guy that's getting booted out? You know?
That's the other thing.
Yeah, exactly. And so, and so.
What's more important, the group or the individual?
For me, it's, the individual.
I mean, that's why I want to.
Depends on the group.
Yeah, man.
For me, I mean, if the individual is me. I mean, for me, I love me more than all of you. And, but the thing is that it's kind of like, I have things to get done. I have to prove things. I've experimented with community, and it's like, I frankly, the consensus-based systems, and I kind of feel like, if I had, like, from some of the scenarios that I've been to before, if I had a way of knowing what they were like before I went there, then I could it'd be more predictable. And I could know whether I want to go or not. And so now, I've made it so that I'm very easy to predict. And then people can then choose whether they want to, do they believe that I'll be a fair person? And when I'm fair, by what standard am I fair? What flavor of fair have I signed up for? Because a lot of people do horrendous shit. They kill people and they say, that was fair. And they've got a different idea of what fair means. And so people, will decide if my idea of fair is what they want.
Then you're unfair in my favor. Is what I prefer.
I mean,
if you're gonna pick,
Well, right.
If you're talking about fairness,
there's all kinds of fair that goes on out there too. I mean, for example, like right now, anybody living on land. Is subjected to what fair is decided by county commissioners and state legislators and a variety of different government workers and your neighbors and yes, yeah. And it's like, but you know, can you go someplace where there's a layer of like something that may seem more reasonable to you and they're going to try and keep a reasonable space protected away from maybe less reasonable surroundings?
Every dictator believes that.
That's true. And so then you got to find the dictator that, you know, it's like, go pick your country. Here you've got, of course, you know, in our country, then we change our dictator. We don't even have a dictator. It's such a mess. But anyway, I don't want to even get into that. I don't want to even think about that. Ivan?
Well, to me, it's quite... clear. I mean, if you do own the land, you are responsible for the development of the land, and it's up to you to make sure that the work is prioritized so you get done the things that are the most important. And then you have other people coming to your land, perhaps because they want to learn, perhaps because they don't have the means to do it by themselves, perhaps because they just want to. They are, of course, free to leave, but also to accept that you, as an owner, make the decisions, and yeah, you just accept it. Your day is full of work anyway.
So I want to point out that the thing that we're going to shoot for here isn't necessarily just a plain dictatorship either. The thing that I've outlined in the past on Permies, and I'm not sure if I did in a podcast or not, is a hybrid system where 90% of the decisions are made through independent thought. Probably about 8% are made based upon something that's consensus-based, and then it's the remaining 2% that are going to be, you know, dictator-based. And which, you know, for consensus-based systems, 90% of their effort goes into trying to hash out something that could have been resolved in a moment by a dictator. But
All right, it's time to eat. I think we're done. If you like this sort of thing, come on out to the forums at permies.com, where we talk about evil dictators, homesteading, and permaculture all the time.